Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-birthday boy, my producer, my brother, Count Panic himself. Happy birthday, Count Panic!
Yes, thank you so much, Bob, for those wishes, and thank you everybody that wished me throughout the day. I appreciate that. They say vampires don't age, but it's in fact that they do. Each day as time continues on, we're still aging.
Yes.
Yeah.
So normally we have pleasantries throughout the show.
Pleasantries.
But we have a very special guest on this week.
Yes.
Different shows throughout the ages, one of them being Psychic Kids. I would love to introduce the Bob After Dark universe to Chris Fleming himself. Oh, hey there, Chris.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Chris, welcome to Bob After Dark. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, Bob. So do you ever do a show, Bob, in the morning?
I was on the morning show twice. Recently, like I was on. I was recently on talking about the Alien Files, and then I was on years ago. And I was too spooky for them. Apparently,
you could have a show like in the afternoon, Bob in the afternoon, Bob in the morning, and Bob in the dark.
I like that. So, Chris, we got a lot to talk about tonight. But in essence, can you tell us who you are and a little bit about yourself? Just, you know, you take the wheel, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a guy that grew up in a haunted house, you know, and had experiences, and my mom had experiences, and I just grew up thinking that that stuff was normal. I was very fortunate. I had a couple of friends in grade school that, you know, they questioned some of the stuff I was telling them about ghosts. So they said, hey, can we sleep over? We want to experience this. And they did. You know, Brian and Blue, they slept over, and then I had some other friends stay over. So for me, it was like, okay, here's a collective experience. You know, my best friends got to experience the ghosts that are in my house. So for me, I just kind of thought it was normal, you know? And then, you know, as you get older, you just realize some people believe in it, some don't. So for me, it wasn't anything that I thought I would be doing in the future. It was just something that I was like, okay, this is, you know, this just goes on. My dad would tell me to ignore it, you know, focus on other things. He'd give me comic books to take my mind off, and he got me actually addicted to comic books. My mom was like, you know, just don't really talk about this too much, you know. But then when I went into college, I mean, to high school and college, you know, still having experiences and saw that some people had interest, I had a lot of questions, you know, about these things. So didn't do too much in college, even though we had a couple hauntings happen in our fraternity house and some other guys that had experiences. But then out of college, you know, I studied as a graphic designer, commercial artist, a fine artist, I should say. I got a degree in fine art, and then I studied psychology and music. So I got minors in both of those. I was going to go back and do psychology, but I felt at the time with my immaturity that I wouldn't be able to handle, because I'm a very empathetic and very emotional person, that I wouldn't be able to handle people's emotions. So for me, it was something that, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, you know, because I was going to get two degrees and then work on my master's for art. Then I got out of college, job fell through, unfortunately. I was really upset about that. And then, so I was an artist for a couple of years doing a commercial artist, freelance artist. And I got hired by this newspaper that two of my buddies worked for. It was a great experience. And I really enjoyed it. And then from there, I got to know a couple people in Chicago in the early 90s. And we'd go ghost hunting. We'd go to some places, cemeteries mostly, like Bachelor's Grove Cemetery and some other places that had some amazing experiences. But it wasn't something that I thought I would pursue as a career. I mean, for me, it was my art. And then I got talked into doing mortgages, something that I never thought I would do. And I just actually, the guy that hired me back in 97, I just saw him last week at an art show downtown Chicago. The reason why I'm saying this is because I want people to realize there's a lot of different things that I've done in my life, but everything always kept pushing me back to the paranormal for crazy reasons. I mean, I remember saying to the universe once, I said, you know what, I'm doing these mortgages and, you know, it's a whole different thing, more respectable and everything, you know, and then the design and the art sitting behind a computer and sitting in, you know, like a cubicle. Now I'm out meeting people and this was kind of cool and I'm helping people get homes and financially. But then people started coming up to me, complete strangers, and telling me ghost stories. And I just thought, what the hell's going on here? I mean, I'm trying to, you know, do something in the financial district and people keep telling me ghost stories. And it goes, I got to feel, I don't know why I got to tell you this. I saw a ghost. Do you believe in ghosts? And I'm like, yeah, I grew up in a haunted house. And it was happening so frequently that I said, all right, the universe is telling me something because this is getting crazy. And then one night at Six Corners in Chicago, the mortgage business was about 6-7 o'clock at night. Several of the other loan officers started telling ghost stories out of the blue. And I never brought it up in the office. I mean, because I'm, you know, I'm doing financing and stuff for people. But several people from different countries, we're talking about Asia, we're talking about Africa, and they started telling ghost stories. I'm sitting there listening to this, like, how fascinating, the different cultures and the belief systems. So that gave me an idea, and lo and behold, I published a magazine for 5 years called Unknown Magazine in the 90s, and I did that till about 2000, 2001, and then I got so busy at a different company, the mortgages, I couldn't do both. I was burned out, but I remember telling my girlfriend at the time, I said, I got a feeling that the universe is going to have me do the paranormal and tell these stories and interview people in a different forum, like maybe on TV or something, you know? I remember telling her that in like 2000. And then 2003, I got contacted to do Dead Famous. I think that was like in July or August of 2000. They reached out to me. I told them no, I wasn't interested because I was busy in the mortgage business. And then the producer who I still talk to, we're still really good friends, and I just spoke to her a week ago. She's very alpha for a woman, put it that way.
Yeah.
She kept pushing me and she says, no, we really need you, you know, and my mom says, I'll just fly out to the UK and just, you know, have fun for 2 days. You know, it's probably never going to happen. And it did happen, you know, and when it did, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it because it wasn't something that I wanted to be in the public talking about, because there was times I got ridiculed and stuff in grade school, high school, because people didn't believe in it. So I got thrown into it, and I'm glad in a way, you know, because it got me to go to some of the most haunted places in the world, and it got me to have some really extraordinary, further advancing paranormal experiences, and it opened my mind up, and I wouldn't be the same person I was today unless I took that chance, and Charlotte had pushed me as a producer to do it. So I'm grateful. You know, and then because of that, I realized, you know, everything else I've done, it's always pushed me back to the paranormal. So I guess this is something that I'm supposed to focus on. And I have been for all these decades.
What a part of your early part of your career stands out to you the most as something, the most prolific case you ever
covered? I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you. You said, okay, what stands out to me?
In your early career, what stands out to you as one of the most prolific cases you worked on then?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, if I remove myself from the equation of experiences that I've had in the house I grew up in this house, there's a couple. There was the one case that, how do I say this? This woman, she was a dancer at a club in Chicago, and she had an attachment. So what ended up happening was, I confronted this attachment that she had, and it ended up taking knives out of the kitchen and was going to either cut itself or going to stab me. And it was talking in like three multiple voices. And her dancing name was Trinity. And she had this attachment for a period of time where she'd black out and wouldn't remember anything. So I'm standing there, and she's got these knives, and I'm supposed to help her, and all of a sudden, I'm like, God, what do I do? I'm like, you know, within seconds, she could cut herself or cut me, and who's going to know if I die or she dies, you know, what really is happening here? And all of a sudden, I saw Jesus, and I saw Michael, Archangel Michael, and he was huge. He was like 15 feet tall, and I'd seen him before when I was a kid, when we had the demonic entities that were in the house. But I saw him at an angle though, like he was hovering above me, so I never really got to see how tall he actually was, as well standing next to somebody else. And I realized that this guy's, you know, 10 to 15 feet tall. He's just huge. And they said in the most comfortable voice, and it's funny because I thought about this last week. He said, just tell them we love them. I go, what? I mean, she's ready to kill herself or kill me. And you're telling us, and they said this like three times. Very calm, very collective. And I was a little upset at first, like they were so calm and collective. And they said, just say it. And I said, so I took a step forward looking into her eyes, which wasn't her eyes. And I said, we love you. And all of a sudden, she shrieks and they shoot out of her, pass right through me. And I felt this just go right through my chest. It was like ice cold. She collapses to the kitchen that we were in. She looks up at me. She's like, oh my gosh, she starts crying. I said, what happened? And I said, these entities were inside you. So further on during that case is we found out there was three specific entities, which is they manipulated her into taking that name Trinity, because there's three of them. She had three tattoos. One was a demonic clown. One was a snake that wrapped around her leg. And then the other one was this flaming skull. And each one of those tattoos represented one of these entities. I'm not saying the tattoos are anything demonic or evil. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when these type of entities can claim somebody, they will sometimes create some type of marking or further advancement of taking hold of that person. And that's what happened here. So, you know, I started explaining scripture to her. I started showing her scripture. I had this thing actually start to speak through me, where she could then talk to it and no longer give permission and cast it out. And then it was one of those experiences where I got to admit that first time, this was 2005, I was scared for that moment, because I'm sitting there thinking that people will never realize what's happening here if she kills herself or kills me. You know, people may never know the truth, but luckily that did not happen. And it was a big learning experience for me. Now, it's something I dealt with these things before, but not in a situation with knives and in a sheer moment where someone could have died. So she ended up, we found out that, I mean, she turned her back on God several years before because her mom had died in a car crash, and she used to go to church with her mom all the time. So she was mad at God that happened, and she didn't get along with her father, so she kind of went on her own, had a kid or two, and just was having kind of a miserable life, I guess. And she was always cursing God. So I guess something happened along the way that created this attachment. Now, because of this, giving her a fighting chance that she no longer had these things attached to her, channeling through her, putting her in really bad situations, she was able to reestablish a relationship with her father. She ended up getting a really good job, moving and creating a better life. And, you know, now she's been married for several years, and she had more kids. And last time I talked to her was about 2 years ago. So it was one of those situations where I've always kept in touch for the most part with some of these cases, with the people, to see how they're doing. But that was a case that I have to bring that up. I mean, I've been held down by a demonic entity. I've been lifted off the floor. I've seen things come out of the walls since when I was a kid. But when there's somebody else involved and you realize that you really can't be their mind, you know, to fight this and overcome the fear. So I've learned I'm more afraid of people being affected by these things and what they may or may not do than seeing these things. I'm not afraid of these things at all. I'm just afraid that what they could do to that person or somebody else, and, you know, not being able to stop them in time. So
in that story you were just sharing, you were saying that your vision of Saint Michael the Archangel and Jesus, that wasn't your first time experiencing that particular vision. Are you comfortable sharing that the earlier vision with us, like when your first time you experienced that was?
That's not a problem, you know. I mean, I was very lucky that when I grew up, my dad was a strong Catholic because he went to a Catholic school, you know, so I went to a Catholic grade school, first or eighth grade. And really, you know, Catholicism doesn't really have anything to do with it. It has to do with the teachings from the Bible and stuff. So I knew of Jesus at a very young age, and I went through when things were happening in the house, I used to pray a lot, and I would go talk to the priests and stuff, and I would, you know, we do confession and stuff. I do it face to face sometimes, because I tell them about the stories of things going in my house. They'd ask if they wanted to come bless and stuff, but I told them, well, no, because there's some ghosts in the house that I'm kind of friends with. I don't want them to be cast out. And they would try to tell me, well, you know, all those things are evil. They shouldn't be there. And I disagreed on some of those things. So as a young kid, it's like, oh, if they come into my house and everything's gone, it's going to be different. But it was a learning experience. So I had, with these shadows used to come out of the walls, and this would have been, we moved in the house in the late 1970. And I think things started happening about 71, 72 with the shadows that were coming out of the walls. And I started sleeping in my parents' room because of them. I was just terrified of these things. Then there'd be growls. There would be other stuff holding me down in the bed. And then sometimes I was levitating and have scratches. And, you know, I can go on and on with the noises, the voices, and everything else that happened. But they were always coming out of the walls as if they were coming out of another dimension. And they would turn into different things. Then there's the soldiers and stuff that were bloody. And I didn't know what that was until I ended up doing Help My House Is Haunted. And it made sense. But there was the time where, you know, I wake up and I'm sleeping on my stomach and all these things are on my back scratching and they're holding me down and I'm hearing this hissing sound. It's kind of almost like snakes, but they're these creatures. And I feel them. They're pulling me into the darkness, like they're pulling my soul out or whatever they were doing. And it's hard to explain how painful this was. It wasn't physically painful. It was as if that there was something going on. It's like you're falling, but you're falling in so many different directions. And I said, God, please, you know, help me. And all of a sudden, they were completely off me, and the room was just filled with this bright light. So, you know, the first thing you do is when you see a bright light, I mean, you open your eyes and you're looking at your hands like, oh my God, it's solid bright in here. What's going on? And you look up because you feel something above you. When I looked up, I just saw this beautiful glowing angel. And when I say angel, that was an archangel because he had on like armor, like stuff on his shins, his like these boots, the shins, and had a shield and had this chest of armor that was glowing like it was pure silver or something, very shiny, like metal. And then he had this sword. The sword was a really big sword and stuff, but it was like pure white, as if it wasn't like silver or anything like that. It was just pure white, the sword. And it was glowing. And when I looked at him, I only remember seeing, you know, the leg and everything because it was I was down below him and I was looking up. And when I looked at his face, he looked at me, and his face was like gold. It was like a goldish color. And the eyes were pure white. There was no pupils or anything like that. I never fully understood that until I had a couple other encounters in the last 20 years. And then I realized what that was. It's the reason why it was pure white is because they come directly from the source of the creator, which is pure light. So when I saw that, that means that it was universal truth. It was you know, purity. And he had this long, you know, like it's blondish, goldish, like it was like a yellowish more than the gold face. And he didn't smile or anything. He just looked at me. Then he looked up and then he shot back up into the light. And then my room returned to, you know, this nighttime, just being dark. I sat up and I was, you know, it was kind of hyperventilating and everything because I couldn't believe what happened. And I remember, you know, telling my mom and everything, and she said that was an angel. That was Michael, Archangel, you know, protector. And I may or may not have been familiar with his name at the time because this might have been like maybe second, third grade, I think. But it was something that I became really intrigued by this, and I may or may not have discussed this with the priest. I just can't remember because it was so long ago. But I remember during confirmation, which we had in third grade, we had to take an additional name, you know. So I took Michael. I said, I want my name to be Michael because, you know, of what I experienced and that he was there to help me. So I said my name became Christopher Stephen Michael Fleming.
Fun fact.
I took that during confirmation.
Fun fact, my confirmation name was Michael too, Chris.
Yeah. So that was the one experience. And then, you know, obviously going to a school, I was an altar boy and everything. And I got along with some of the priests. They were pretty cool. I mean, I questioned them in third grade and got a little kind of debates with them. And they said, if you keep asking these questions, we're going to send you the principal. And I'm like, well, okay, what's the principal going to do? Because I've got questions, right? So I was questioning certain things in the faith, And they weren't anything bad. It was just like, okay, you say Jesus goes up to the mountain and he prays to the Father, but then you're saying he's God. How could Jesus be God if he's praying to the Father? You know, and then I would just say stuff like that. So if, you know, and then the Garden of Eden just didn't make sense to me with the serpent. Now it's, it was walking upright. Well, why is it walking upright? You know, and you know, why is it talking? And so I would ask all these questions. And if there was Adam and Eve, how did we get here? Who did they meet? You know, well, they met a wife and husband. Okay, but where'd they come from? You know? So I had these questions that would really upset them. But going into sixth grade, it was fourth and fifth grade was when the demons started really appearing out of the walls. We would go through sitters, they would quit. And they said, you got the devil in your house. They wouldn't come here anymore. And then my parents started fighting. And my dad started drinking and stuff. He wasn't playing hockey like he in the pros anymore. He was playing in these other leagues. So we were going through hard times. I think a lot of it had to do with what was in the house. So my mom was always working, my dad was working, and nobody was home. So it was me and my sister taking care of ourselves sometimes, and we'd have sitters, and they quit because of the darkness and stuff that would appear in the house. So I wasn't getting much sleep. I would sleep with the light on, and I'd afraid to go to the bathroom, so sometimes I'd just pee in my bed, or I'd pee down the vent because I didn't want to go in the hallway because these things would sometimes come out in the hallway. So I almost failed fifth grade because I was falling asleep in class all the time. And I couldn't really pay attention because I was worried about what was happening in the house. And then sixth grade, my parents had a conference with them and they allowed me to go through. We took summer classes and I was able to go through to sixth grade. Then in sixth grade, I guess my dad got arrested. My mom had told me this story. He got arrested, blew off a couple stoplights and stuff, was drunk. And police arrested him, put him in jail. When my mom got off the flight, some of the other flight attendants said, you know, it was in the news, paper, or whatever, you know, your husband got arrested. My mom's like, oh, I can't keep dealing with this. Well, when I went to school, nobody told me. You know, my parents didn't say anything. So kids were teasing me at school saying, your dad's a jailbird. And I'm like, what? Your dad was in jail? No, he wasn't. You know, so I was gotten fights that day with some of the kids. And then some of the kids in the playground were surrounding me making jokes. So I started fighting everybody. You know, and even some of my good friends, and I didn't understand why they were saying this, making this up, you know. So when I went home that day, I was really upset. And I remember going into my bedroom, I laid down, it was probably at 3:30 in the afternoon. And I said, God, I just don't want to be here anymore. You know, I can't take this. And all I remember is I sat up and I was no longer in my bedroom. I was in the hallway of my school. And I'm like, wait a minute, I was just in my bedroom. I just left school over an hour ago. So I'm looking at both of my hands. You know, I'm looking at the front and the back of the hands. And I'm like, no, this is me. This isn't a dream. This is real. So I recognize the hallway that, you know, the far left door is the one that goes into my home room. So I said, well, I don't know why I'm here. So I'll walk over to my home room. I walk into my home room and I see this man in a robe and he's right by the window because we have these big glass windows on one side of the class. And looking out is the playground. And if you look out in the distance, that's where the event happened earlier that day with all the kids. And he's standing looking out towards there. So I started walking up to him. I said, wait a minute, this guy looks like, from behind, he looks like Jesus. I'm like, come on. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm like, Jesus? And he didn't say anything. And so I walked up to him right beside him. And he turns to look at me. And it's him. But as crazy as this sounds, there's a reason to it. He turns and looks at me, and he's got this, like, novelty gag thing on his face. He's got the Groucho Marx glasses, the nose, and the mustache. So I start laughing because, come on, Jesus is wearing this little novelty thing. So I start laughing, and he takes it off and, like, disappears, and he says, Chris, it's good to see you laugh again. And I'm like, whoa. You know, he's like, you haven't laughed in a while. I said, yeah, you're right. I go, you know, I wasn't laughing at you. He's like, no, I know. And that's the point. He goes, it's just something that I did to cheer you up, to take your mind off of what happened today. And I'm looking at him. I'm like in awe. I'm like, okay. And he said to me, he goes, I want you to realize something. He goes, you know, they don't understand what's going on, what happened today. They didn't really mean to do that. They don't know what you're going through. They don't know what's going on at home and all this other stuff. And he goes, you can't take stuff like this too personal. And he goes, do you understand? And I'm like, I guess, you know. And he's like, listen, there's going to be a time in the future and you're going to go through stuff like this again. But I want you to realize that when people do stuff like this or they treat somebody like that, they don't fully understand what you're going through. And it's very important for you to know this. I said, okay. And he says, you know, I love you. And I said, I love you too. And then all of a sudden, everything just fades. And then I'm back in my bed. And I'm sitting there going, what just happened? And I wasn't able to tell anyone because my sister was out playing and nobody was home. And I just sat there going, you know, I can't believe this. And I remember telling the priest, you know, and I don't remember what he said. He just says, you know, it's a remarkable experience. It's a good story. So for me, it was like, okay, I had some type of significant spiritual experience. And I had a couple others later on, you know, but for me, that was a turning point to realize not only was he real, but he came and said something that shifted me that I can handle hard times, you know, and realize that we're all here for a purpose. So there were several other experiences in my life where he came through with other people and stuff and dealing with ghosts and spirits. But for me, that was the first that really made the impact and the one that I realized, you know, to me, he was real. So,
Chris, we have a phone call. Folks, if you have any questions for Chris, our phone line is 219-845-1100. We are going to be limiting calls tonight for Chris's time. So let's just take one we have right now. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bob. How are you this evening?
Good evening, John. Chris, can you hear our caller?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay. I'll relay the message. He says good evening. So what's going on, John?
Oh, first of all, I want to say a big happy birthday shout out to the Count. Thank you. I don't know how many years that would be in Count years, but...
thank you there, John. It's a lot in Count years, I think, yeah.
But many, many more. So my question to Chris, so since he can't hear me, I'll try to keep it as simple as I can. Most of your guests, they seem like when they have encounters with spirits, demons, ghosts, or whatever, that it doesn't come natural to them. They go out, they look, you know, if a place is haunted, they go out and see if they could find anything out of the ordinary. Listening to Chris pretty good, it seems like the ghosts, the demons, whatever, what have you, are all attracted to him. It's sort of like the opposite where, you know, an investigator or whatever would go out looking for these types of things, whereas in his case, it seems like they're attracted to him and they come into his life. Do you follow what I'm saying?
That's a great question, John. Chris, you didn't hear that, did you?
I cannot hear anything.
Okay, that is fine. We'll relay it. Thank you, John, for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Chris, John wanted to know, most of my guests seems like they go out. Our guests are coming out looking for, people go out searching for paranormal, where it seems like the paranormal and even the biblical sightings are coming to you. John wanted to know why you think that it attracts to you so much.
That's a very good question and not something I really want to answer.
That's fine. No problem.
Because there's a lot of other experiences that involve that reason. And it's not something I think is something appropriate to discuss.
Of course. No problem. And we totally understand that. In the meantime, folks, we just want you to know that that was our call for the evening. If there's any more, we'll keep an eye on it. But that was a good question. And we understand privacy is important, Chris.
The only thing I'll say is this. Because, I mean, if I was able to tell you, it wouldn't, I'm just not ready.
Of course.
To say that. But what I'll tell you this is that if you have a strong faith, you know, anyone that calls upon angels, they will be there. And please understand that even them being there doesn't mean they can fulfill your wish, because your wish may contradict what the lesson is for you or for somebody else. But when I had the experience in 2009 with my girlfriend there, when this demonic entity was holding me down, and I looked at this thing, and, you know, the whole incredible thing happened. She went and got the holy water, started throwing the holy water, and then all of a sudden the ceiling opens up and these angels come down. And I said, whoa, I said, you do this for me? And they said, no, we do this for everybody. And I was so humbled by that. But in the same sense, I felt like, oh my God, did I disrespect them? You know, but it was very important. Now, I fast forward to March 25th of this year. I had an NDE due to a bone marrow biopsy. I had a vasovagal syncope with a hypofusion brain thing that happened, which because of the pain and because I've been dealing with hypoxia and apnea since I've had chemo, my brain's not getting enough oxygen. And because it's not getting enough oxygen, if there's any other type of trauma or whatever or anything that goes on, it's kind of hard for me to breathe. So during my 12th bone marrow biopsy, I never really had any problems before. I was always like, it's no big deal, you know. People told me how much painful it is. Well, this one was painful. It was so painful that I was like, oh my God, and I'm screaming out going, this is what people were talking about that hate getting a bone marrow biopsy or saying it's the most painful thing they ever experienced. Right now, I'm experiencing the most painful thing I experienced. And then I started to pass out. And as I passed out, I said, no, I don't pass out. I can tolerate pain. And that flooded and reflooded my brain, which caused me to collapse. And I had a vasovagal syncope. And because of that, when they started bringing me to, I thought it was 1978. And as at 1978, I could not place. I was having all the different memories from different times overlapping. Which went on for a little while. And then all of a sudden my dad appeared. I saw a tunnel when they had me in the hospital. They brought me down to the emergency and they always doctors and they're doing tests and everything. And they started yelling, his oxygen's only 50-55%. And they said, he's critical. And, you know, they're saying all this stuff and I'm just looking around and then wanting to go out. I'm like, I want to go to sleep. I'm so tired. And they're like, no, you can't. Cause if I did, I wouldn't come back. They were saying, but then I saw a tunnel open up. My dad came out. There were some other people behind him. And I said, Dad, what are you doing here? You know, and they're like, who are you talking to? This is my dad. He's telling me that if I want to go, I can go. I'm like, no, Dad, this is just a bone marrow biopsy. I'm like, what are you doing? I go, this is crazy. No, I don't want to go. I'm doing this music. I'm doing everything else. I go, I can't go now. He's like, well, son, if you want to come now, you can come now. And I'm like, I started crying. Like, no, don't do this to me. You know, I'm not ready to go. I go, I mean, I beat cancer. I'm going through this. I got other things I want to do. I'm not going to die from this. And then, so they closed up. They were gone. They did a CT scan. They did all these other blood tests. And then they came back. And all of a sudden, I see all these angels. And there's this row of angels. And I remember the one doctor goes, oh, you know, do a blood test to make sure he's hallucinating. He's check for drugs or alcohol. And I'm looking. I'm going, I'm not, you know, I'm just going to ignore him because I'm going to go look at this, right? And the nurse comes up, she's like, what do you see? You know, and I say, I see all these angels. And I start describing them to her. And I'm telling her what I'm seeing. And at first I'm upset. I'm like, why are they showing up? Because I don't need them right now. You know? I mean, I told a woman earlier today when I walked in, you gotta believe in your angels and protect you and stuff like that. But then now this is happening. I don't need this because I can handle this. But then I realized, wait a minute, they're not looking at me, they're looking at everybody in the room. And they were all showing up for everybody in the room, and I realized that there was a lot of people in the room that were praying to try to make sure that I would survive. And because they were praying, all these angels showed up. And I'm watching this going, oh my God, you're here for them. And so I'm telling this one nurse, you know, what I'm seeing. And then slowly they started, I mean, I saw something else behind them and I'm not going to go into that. I've talked a little bit about that before, but they showed me some stuff behind it and a little bit of prophecy. And then all of a sudden they're gone. And then I remember just being in recovery room and my head hurt so bad. And my head hurt for weeks. I mean, almost a month. It was like having a concussion. But all of this, just so you know, it's in the medical reports that I saw my father and I told him I don't want to go. And I saw the angels. It's all in the medical reports. I can send you one of the I can send a copy of you. It's a copy to you. So it happened. So I was kind of like, not something I expected. But then again, there's the angels, you know, because they're there for us. They were there for the other people. And, so, you know, so now anyway, they just got me a PAP machine, which I tried using last night and working. It, you know, it's kind of tough, but I just deal with oxygen from the chemo affecting my brain to where I'm not getting enough oxygen. So, so it's interesting. I mean, I don't know where you want to go with this now, but you know, this is just correlated to some of the other experiences, how I continue to have these experiences with angels or whatever else. I have dozens of them.
There is a story you talk about on your panels where you were feeling an attack, and when you were with your partner at the time, your girlfriend, I believe you were saying, and the I'm trying to relay the story so you could tell it better than me. It's the one where you were saying there was, it seemed like there was a very, very big battle between the light and the dark going on in your bedroom at the time.
My bedroom. Yeah, that's the one in 2009 when she threw the holy water.
Yeah, that's when you...
because there was this entity that was holding me down because I had done a demonic case earlier that day for a woman that was in Michigan, Detroit, Michigan. And I did it over the phone over 2 hours. And then there was another case 2 weeks before what I got called to Alexian Brothers at 6-7 in the morning because a woman was possessed. And her boyfriend contacted a friend of mine, and that friend of mine kept calling my phone at 6 in the morning. And ironically, that friend of mine, who I stopped talking in 2021, I stopped talking to him. He's now arrested for murder. He just killed his girlfriend 3 weeks ago. If you look up in Schaumburg, Kevin Monarchy, you'll see that. And I warned him in 2021 that he needed to clean himself up and go get help because these voices and these things would make him do something he'd regret. I can go into more details, but I'm not going to. That's not why we're here.
No, of course.
That. But that's a whole other case that went on for years. We've got some of that documented from 2012 at his house. So, unfortunately, they won. They beat him. They caused him to go do that, and they caused him to be the person he is now. So, if you're not careful and you don't control your thoughts and you stay clean, they can make you do things or tell you to do things, but it's your free will, whether you do it or not, to do things that you'd regret. So, going back to that 2009, was it 2009? No, that was 2000. I apologize. No, that was 2000, and that would have been January 2011, I believe it was, that happened where the thing was holding me down and saw the prophecy, 2010 or 2011. I got it in my journal and all the sketches that I did, and was holding me down, and I'm looking at this creature, and I'd never seen anything like this before, and I've spoken about this creature in some of my lectures back then, and I spoke to Adam Bly about this. You know, what kind of demon is this? You know, it could be Leviathan or something. It was half snake, but it had the body very similar to like the alien creature, you know, from the movies, Alien versus Predator, very similar to the alien, that black, oily, but it had the face of a black snake, and it was huge. I mean, if this thing stood up, it would have been at least 10 to maybe 10 feet, 9 feet tall. But it was crouched down, holding me down with one arm. But they had all these quills, very similar to like a porcupine or insect, on its arms and on its back, and they were moving like making this noise like locusts or like bugs flying and flapping. And then there was all these imps behind them saying, we hate you. And I was like, the ironic thing is I wasn't scared at all because I've dealt with some of this stuff when I was a kid. So I was fascinated. I'm like, you're holding me, what did I do to make you so mad that you're doing this to me? And as they're holding me down, you know, she sees that my body goes into the bed and she screams and she races to go get the holy water when I told her to. And I'm looking at this thing going, and I knew it couldn't hurt me. I mean, I knew it couldn't kill me, but I knew it was trying to make a point that, you know, you stay away from some of these people and these things that we own and we control. So they're trying to, you know, create fear. And as I'm looking at them, you know, I just started thinking about my angels, like, okay, they're going to make you leave. And then she gets the holy water, and then as she did that, the ceiling opened up, and I see like this tunnel that goes all the way up. This is dimensional, which means that no longer was there a ceiling. Another dimension opened up. As I looked up it, I saw some of the archangels in armor at the very top, and they jumped down through like this tube of light. And as they did that, they turned in this pure energy light forms, and they came into the room. And as they did that, there was other black masses that came out of the walls. It was kind of like you just shook a hornet's nest, and all these bees were flying around, but they were all black masses flying around. And I'm watching all these things as the white lights are attacking these black masses. One comes right for me, like to get at me, and then this white light comes and takes it away. And I'm blown away. I'm fascinated. I'm seeing something that we don't normally see in the visual spectrum, and here I am witnessing this. She's like, "What's happening?" Because she sees my face in this total shock and this awe. I told her, "Quiet. I'm witnessing something." And And as I'm watching this, it was just fascinating until they were all gone. And then the ceiling closed up and the black masses were gone. And then this one presence came forward and he put his like hand out. And all of a sudden, I started seeing all these visions. I saw, you know, these riots, wars. I saw us at home with masks. And I saw that distribution was shut down. I saw me standing next to my mom and sister at my mom's place watching TV, but I didn't see my stepdad. And then I saw Obama, and then I saw like layers, like Time Machine, where there's then someone after him. And then I saw the riots, and I saw the Capitol, and I saw all these things happening. They were happening so fast in succession. So I spoke about this on radio shows and at presentations and stuff from like 2011 on. I said that there'd be riots, little civil things. We'd be stuck at home for a period of time. We wouldn't go anywhere. I said there'd be like racial tension and everything. And I said then there'd be a big war and there'd be martial law. And I said that would happen after gas hits $5 a gallon. And you can go on my Twitter and stuff. You'll find me talking about this for the last 10 years. And I said once gasoline hits $5 a gallon, there's going to be another world war. And I said that we would attack Iran, you know, that Trump would attack Iran and this and that. And so all these things came to pass. Now, I didn't say Trump back then at the time, but I said we would end up attacking Iran. Then when he became president, I said, oh, my God, it's going to be him. So when all this started to happen in succession, I don't know why I was shown this. I guess it was something of time and space, because time and space was affected by them coming into the room, maybe. I don't know. But then I know a voice then spoke to her and told her that everything is okay, everything will be fine, and then told her she needs to talk to her father, because she hadn't talked to her father since she was 7 years old. He said, he's going to die soon. You need to talk to her, talk to him. And I don't know if she ever did or not. But there tends to be these prophecies that sometimes occur when there's these angelic experiences. And like what I saw March 25th with all the angels behind them were all these warrior angels looking down on earth. And I think they're all lining up for a great war. So, you know, I'm worried that we may go to some great war, which I hope we don't. I hope it's wrong. But having seen these things play out before, that's what I'm afraid of right now.
Speaking of fear, on your cases, have you ever had a case that frightened you? Okay, I was saying, speaking of fear, you work a ton of cases, and it's interesting to kind of be a lack of a better term, a protagonist in the paranormal world. But have you ever had a case where where it maybe have frightened you a little bit?
I get startled. I mean, it's just a normal human thing, but I'm sure. Not afraid to die. I mean, I had a near-death experience in 2010. I had another one in 2011. I had a couple other close calls. You know, I've been out of my body and I've come back. I've gone into the void, whether it's the dark room or the white room. I've come back. And then, you know, once again, I have no fear of death, man. The only thing that scares me is people hurting other people, you know, and animals. I mean, seeing what someone can do to themselves, you know. When I say I go back to that moment with Trinity when she was standing there, I was more afraid of not of me dying, but of people thinking that I did something wrong. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't here to tell the story. You know, that's the one thing, the misconception. So, but I have no fear of death. But people, you know, there's people bother me, annoy me sometimes when they have these things going on about them because of what they can do to affect our timeline, our lifeline, and they can affect other people. And that effect to other people is affecting other people's purposes and destinies for being here, which is extremely destructive on the cellular level. Because when we come down here, we have certain things we're supposed to do, to advance spiritually, but also to interact with others. But if someone comes here and distracts us from this or takes us out of the equation, it's not so much only affecting us, it's affecting all those other people that we were supposed to interact with. And I feel that's just so wrong and so selfish. So that's what scares me more than anything, is people not completing their purpose and their destiny for being here.
That is a very prolific answer, Chris. That's wow.
Yeah, because when you see it, you know, and I don't want to use certain terms because I'm not into New Age stuff.
No.
and it's all perspective, is when you see from higher levels of understanding of consciousness, you know, not just seeing from a three-dimensional, fourth-dimensional, but you're seeing how every single thing we do for the most part, affects everybody. And you see how it affects those other people. And like Betty Eady used to talk about this with the ripple effect when she wrote the book Embraced by the Light. So I find that fascinating how that ripple effect really is important. So if we have politicians or other people affecting us in a certain way, they're affecting not only our lives, but they're also affecting our destiny and our purposes, which is not good because every single person has so many people they're supposed to come in contact with or interact with to make a difference. And you take them out of that equation, you're affecting all those other people too, not just the one person. So it's very important to always try to support people on their path and their destiny of what they're supposed to be doing. As long as it's positive, it's negative, you know, then they're there to be destructive or chaotic to prevent others from experiencing what they're supposed to. Accomplishing. That's like going back in time to grade school and preventing everybody from moving on to the next classes and other levels, right? And eliminating them from ever appearing again. And then all the family and the people they were supposed to meet their whole lives and the great maybe advancements or things they were supposed to create. Like there's a really good thing that I can't remember who said this. But you take a look at what happened in Auschwitz with all the Jews that were killed, you know, whether you believe in, you know, how many there were or not, if we're saying 6 million, 10 million, whatever. Imagine how many of them were supposed to create something in science, medicine, technology, advancement, that if they would have been, they would have evolved and grown up and been able to contribute to society, some of the greatest accomplishments that they would have had. And whether it's any race or anything, you wipe out all those people, is that you have so many of those people that we're going to contribute something very significant to this planet, to society, to humanity. And if you take them out of the equation, it affects all of us. And that's the thing that I'm worried about mostly now with what's going on, you know, with the world.
What's up, Count?
Nothing, Bob. You're doing good.
Oh, I was curious. Did you have a question for Chris?
I got a call here, but I know he can't hear calls.
So we'll take the call and I'll relay it to Chris real quick.
Okay, we'll try it real quick. Let's see.
We'll put a note down. We got to fix that.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll send it to the engineer, I should say. Caller, you're on the air.
Well, good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I'm doing fine. This is Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, and Count, happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Bill.
You don't
appreciate
look a
that.
Day over 100, though.
Thank you.
Okay, you don't look a day over 100.
But, not a day over it. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, I know your guests can't hear me, but I've been enjoying all his experiences. And
we'll relay that to
I
him.
I wish him good luck and everything. So other than that.
Thank you, Bill.
You know, it's good to talk to you guys again. So
good to talk to you too, Bill, as always.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling
in,
Bill.
Thank you very much. And Count, enjoy your birthday today.
Okay? Thank you, Bill. I will. Appreciate that.
Thank that. Chris, he just Chris, the caller just wanted to call and say that your stories were very inspiring, and he wanted to wish you nothing but good luck on your health going forward.
And thank you. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Now, Chris, you have a lot of projects going on right now, and I wanted to talk to you about some of the stuff you have going on the horizon, whether that be your artwork, whether that be appearances going on. You have a very cool thing coming out about your album, and I'm hoping you'll talk a little bit about that too. So would you like to do some plugging on what's going on in the world of Chris Fleming in 2026?
Yeah, in a nutshell is, you know, when I was in the hospital, which would have been back in August of 2024, you know, and I'm being told that, you know, the cancer's spread. I've only got 2 weeks before it's at 100% and my body shuts down. And they're going to start chemo to aggressive chemo to try to stop the spread to save me. And the doctors came in that morning on August 25th. And they said that, 24th to 25th, and they said, you know, we're going to do the best we can. So if you stop the spread, how much time do I got? And they said, well, That's hard to tell. I said, Doc, don't cut the shit. I said, just tell me, how much time do I got? They said, well, you've got anywhere between 2 months to maybe 3 months. And they said, and then one doctor says, he goes, maybe six. But I said, then what's the point? He says, well, we gotta do what we can. I said, all right, you do what you can. I'm going to be here around much longer from that. I don't sense or feel. Well, we like your optimism. So I think it was like a couple of days later, I'm laying there and they started chemo. And I'm just thinking, wow, you know, all the different things that I've had that I foresaw, and here I am. Didn't think it would be cancer, but it makes sense now. And I'm like, wow, I never got to do this, never got to do that, never got to do this. I start thinking about these things. And I'm like, you know, God and angel spirits, I haven't felt anything since I've been here. I mean, I saw something the first night and then the next day. And there's a couple other paranormal things that happened the first couple of days in the hospital. But lo and behold, a voice comes out of nowhere. It says, if you could do anything that you were never able to complete, what would it be? And I said, music. And all of a sudden, there was no voice. So, unfortunately, a couple of days later, my cat had to be put down, got very sick. I couldn't visit him. And I wrote a song about him for 2 days. And I put it on my Facebook. It's called If I Ever Hold Your Paw Again. Now, I've rewritten it and redone it since then. But that led me down a journey of just start writing. So I just started writing music because I was so weak and so tired in bed. And when I'd come home, and you know, after 10 months of going through chemo, I just kind of jumped into writing lyrics and titles and songs, using some AI programs to create it, you know, for now and at the time. And I had so much material at about 100 songs. And my buddy's like, dude, what are you going to do with all this? Because he was a musician. He played for Warrior Soul back in the 90s. And I don't know. I'm just doing it for fun. Just I need an outlet, you know, just express myself. He's like, you should do an album. And I said, oh, that's a great idea. And he's like, oh, I was just kidding. I said, no, that's a great idea. So what I did is I went in the studio for 6 weeks. I mean, I have so much material. I have all these albums lined up. I created an outline of all the materials, all the genres, everything. But I went into the studio, had a couple other musicians play on it and stuff. We remixed, edited it, and over 6 weeks in the studio, you know, we mixed and edited and mastered and added special effects. And I kind of, as a producer, I just decided how I wanted each song from start to finish. And the album is coming out June 12th. It's called Boogeyman Blues. There's 21 songs. They're old blues songs. So some songs are like only 3 minutes and some are five. But it's got some of the old blues, the stomping and the singing, a little bit of gospel, some trance blues where there's a lot of repetition. But every title has a significant meaning, either from my past with the ghosts that I used to see, the creatures of the darkness that came through the wall, or some spiritual experiences that happened, or spirits that I came in contact with and stories that they told me, and I turned those stories into a song. So it's a big passion project for me, and I think it's going to blow people away when they hear it, because they're like, okay, it's not going to be that good. No, it's going to be good. Trust me. When you hear it, and I've had other audio engineers and other musicians listen to it, and they're like, holy cow, right? It's going to surprise a lot of people. So right now I'm doing pre-sale, so there's CD. The CD I'll have in about 2 weeks. And the vinyl's not going to be done probably till August. It's at the printer now at Hellbender Vinyl in Pittsburgh. They do a great job. Colored vinyl, 2 LP set. But the digital download for iTunes and Amazon, you know, June 12th, it's released. So you can download the album. You get 21 songs. And it's going to blow you away. And there's a story from start to finish. And
that's amazing.
That's what's going to, I think, when people sit down and listen to it, the stereophonic sound and everything, and they listen to the lyrics, and they're going to be like, wow, you know, there's a lot of interesting stories being told here. So for me, that's what it was. I'm working on the second album now. We got to finish mastering it, and then I'm just going to keep going. It's pretty much majority of what I want to do right now is the music, and then I got this book I'm writing, and then I go back to doing my spiritual consulting, counseling I've been doing for people, but on a limited basis, because I really want to focus on the music and the art and the book for now to tell these stories.
And folks, I'm talking from experience. I've seen Chris's art in person. It is incredibly impressive. And I wanted to ask you about your art, the stuff that you draw. Do you draw inspiration from cases you've worked on or visions you've had?
Well, you know, I mean, ever since I was a kid, I would draw stuff, you know, comic books and everything, and my cats. And then in high school, I was drawing AC/DC all the time. My teacher would get so upset. Will you please draw something else? you know, strong Angus and Brian and everything, and, you know, monsters and stuff, and a lot of spiritual stuff. You know, I've drawn and done illustrations from a lot of the investigations of some of the ghosts we've come in contact with, or my interpretation of them, you know, and then some of the things that I've seen. And then spiritually, angels, Jesus, and other stuff that I've wanted to create and manifest. So I use many different types of medium. You know, I sketch, draw. I've used AI, you know, as a hybrid. When I was a graphic designer, I was doing everything by hand, paste up production, you name it. We got computers, Photoshop, Illustrator. So I love to dive into Photoshop, Procreate, use all different mixed mediums and play with everything to get my ideas and my points across. So I've been enjoying some of the latest technology that's come out to take my creations a lot further. And then I'm still playing with that. I want to learn a lot more in video. I've never really spent too much time creating video. And I want to create some animation and some videos to some of my music. But that's all new to me. So I've seen some incredible videos people have been making with AI. And I just watched something today with Homelander beating the heck out of somebody. From the, and I'm like, wow. And there's animated cartoons people are doing. So I want to kind of experiment with that with my music to see if I can create some videos. But I just think it's an exciting time for us that as an artist, there's all these other advancements coming out where we can make things quicker, faster, and even better than what we did before. I'm always going to be that artist. So it gives me the chance to do it. And it gives me the chance to work with other artists, musicians, and stuff with my music. And that's what I really want to do when I get into some of these other genres. I want to bring some people in there to play and contribute, because I think that's what the most important thing is, having other people contribute as well.
Other than the album and the art, where can people find you if, you know, spiritual counseling, when you're ready to do that again on more?
Yeah, I'm going to start opening up that in middle of June.
Okay.
Middle or end of June. I mean, I've got 7 art commissions right now. I've got to complete, going back to Obscura Paracon.
Oh, gee, I know. I get it.
Because I had to work on this album, finish it up. So I've got those to get done. I've got a couple classes I'm teaching one-on-one with some people in June. And so I've got 3 people already booked. So as soon as I get caught up in that, bookings, you can start booking now. For middle to end of June and go into July at Booksy.com. You just look for Christopher Fleming and Booksy, and you can book there. But if you go to ChristopherFleming.com, very simple, Christopher Fleming, FLEMING, you'll see where the album's available. And actually, the webmaster's coming over to my house on Friday. We're going to add the remaining event dates. We're going to redo booking for my consultations and kind of move away from Booksy, because people overseas are not able to book on it. Which they used to be able to, but they changed some of their formats. So I want to give other people opportunity. So, and then for paranormal, we got the event coming up this Saturday, actually at St. Charles. So if anybody's around and they want to go to where you can go, you can just, you can go to my Facebook, Chris Fleming Official, and you'll see the post for this Saturday, May 23rd at Aquascape, for the, Spirit Talk. Diet's going to do a gallery reading. I'm going to talk about the soul journey and take questions from the audience regarding life purpose and your soul and stuff. We're doing that, you know, and then there's some other ghost hunts and stuff we're going to be doing during the summer and the fall. So you can go to ChristopherFleming.com to see where that is posted. And then as for TV, I'm not too interested in doing any TV right now, because I really want to control some of these creatives that I want to express, you know, getting the book and the music out and stuff. I've had some ideas for some documentaries that I think they're really important stories that need to be told. So I may start pursuing some individuals to maybe see if we can start putting that together at the end of the year or next year. Because I think these stories do need to be told. But for me, it's like, I want to have hands on with everything right now. Yeah. Especially when I almost died twice in the last 2 years. It's like, I really want to get these things out there so people can enjoy them, or at least I can express myself, you know. But people can get a hold of me at ChristopherFleming.com.
Excellent.
You know, and it's, you know, I'll try to get back to you when I can. But you can see kind of what I'm doing there, and you can listen, you know, get access to the music and stuff. And you're going to like it. I think they'll like it.
And podcast fans, all of this information will be in the bottom of the show notes. You guys can go check that out and see what's going on in the world of Chris Fleming in 2026. Now, Chris, it's hard not to get emotional when you talk because you have such inspirational stories and things to say. I just want you to know that what you've beaten and what you've gone through and being here and just being able to speak with us is such a blessing. And I know that you were meant to stick around for a reason, and it's keep on doing what you're doing, Chris, because I think it's really important work.
And I think anybody that has one, you know, I went through aggressive AML leukemia, acute myeloid leukemia was at 70%, and it went to 70% in just 45 days. So the chemotherapy is really what's killing me right now, is that's really messed up my body. But for me, I know this body is not me. I'm greater than my physical body. Robert Monroe always talked about that. I've been out of my body, and I know this is just a vehicle. So I'm going to use this vehicle as much as I can to create in this world before I leave. And if that inspires other people, that's great. You know, I think that each person has a talent and ability. If they don't know what that is, they got to find out what it is. And the one thing to find that out is to create, express, and contribute. Those are the three words that one of my angels told me about 10 years ago. You're here to create, express, and contribute. So if you don't know what to do, then start creating, expressing, and contributing in some way that helps other people. And said, if you do it through love and intent, then you're doing exactly why you were created.
Well, Count, what do you got to say on that?
I say thank you so much, Chris. Follow him along in all of his endeavors there. Fascinating stuff there, Bob.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. And just the stories you've shared with us tonight, those are going to stuff that's going to stick around with the fan base for a long time. And thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on this late at night for us.
No, you're welcome. You know, thanks for having me. And I'd say in the future, you know, once you've listened to the album, you know, write down some questions and I'll be more than happy to come on and talk about it. And then we can play one or two songs if you want. So I'll give you permission to do that.
100%. Let's we'll put a note in that, yeah, and we'll get you back on as soon as the album's out. And I'm looking forward to listening.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Cal Panic, the birthday vampire.
Yes.
We just want to say goodnight to you, Mom. I hope you have sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And the Tiff, wherever you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below.
Memoriam Development.